Rishis Rabbi Sevelovsky. I want to begin by thanking a few people. First of all, I'd like to thank Noah Chessis and David Eckstein for their unbelievable hard work. Noah, in particular, was asked when Shuki Natalie's son became quite ill, was asked to particular, he was already working on the trip, but was to ramp it up a little bit, and I know it, I don't know, but I'm sure it compromised his siddurim in the past few weeks. It's impossible that it didn't. I want to really thank both Noah, and I want to thank David for making this possible. And I want to thank Rabbi and Rebbetzin Sabalovsky for giving of their time. I had the opportunity to enjoy dinner with the Sabalovskys last week. And, you know, this is, in quotes, vacation time for them. And there are wonderful ways for them to spend their vacation. Some of it is in Eretz Yisrael with you, and some of it is at home having some chill time. And their selfless sacrifice to us is really what made this possible. So I really want to thank them both for making this happen and for his leadership and for him being a mentor for all of us. So since this is a Shabbos, focusing on Shabbos, and you've been introduced to various ideas of Shabbos and Halacha, recognizing that the cornerstone of everything we do as Torah Jews is to allow Torah to be at the cornerstone, and more than that, to be at the forefront of what we do. I think it's also important to discuss a very practical, tactical matter and the responsibilities of how we have to deal with it. And that is, how do we engage a non-observing community in an opportunity for them, as well as for us, to grow spiritually through our engagement by inviting them to shul, explanatory services, as well as our home for Shabbos. I have, in the course of my rabbinical career, had the opportunity of seeing, without exaggeration, today's drivers become tomorrow's walkers. I have seen people literally move from selling their homes, moving closer to a synagogue, transforming their lives, their families' lives, their children's lives, and I've watched how it has also inspired me and my family. The first week, or when I was interviewed for the job at the Boca Raton Synagogue at that point had an open parking lot. And one of my prerequisites before I agreed to take the job was the week before I came that I wanted the parking lot to be closed. Not just for 1 week, for it to be closed, period. And a lot of people took great umbrage at that. They felt that that was important for people who wanted to become more involved in their religious experience to become more observant. I personally felt that it would just create a paradigm that the rabbi is orthodox and the rest of the community does not need to be. I remember receiving a letter from somebody who was at that point not Shomer Shabbos, saying to me, you could not read Rashi, you could not read Hebrew at that point in time, saying to me how this was a terrific mistake and that one of the Rashi yeshivas in Miami Beach had told them all that it was permitted for them to keep an open parking lot, and how I was destroying Kiruv, he didn't know what the word Kiruv was then, destroying outreach by doing this. I told him, and then he offered me a significant raise in my salary should I rethink my feelings on this issue. Suffice it to say that that raise never happened. And the person who made that request, I still keep the letter because it's important for him to see it, now has smicha from Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg. Obviously learned how to read Hebrew, Rashi, even for Rav Zalman, well, it's on tape, I won't make comments on that. Anyway, so the bottom line is that learned how to read Hebrew, is probably has gone through Shas. His children are all Yodea Sefer. And he actually He actually dedicated the funds to build our mikvah. And suffice it to say, he went through his own spiritual journey. And my point being that I think there's an important tension about how we deal with inviting people and how we deal with the institution of Shabbos and the halachas of Shabbos and making it user-friendly for everybody. And what I'd like to do is go through some of the halachas as the cornerstone, and then perhaps dwell a little bit on a paradigm that I'd like to share with you. Whether you're, going to be future rabbanim, and hopefully many of you in this room are, or whether you're going to be future lei balabatim, you'll all have family and friends that are not Shabbos observant, and these are important ideas for you to be able to understand. The first is, if we look at our handout, it's just a series of statements which I think are pretty obvious to everybody in this room, but sometimes even the obvious needs to be restated. And it starts off with the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, where the Rambam writes that one of the mitzvahs is to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how does one love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If you truly love something, you want to share it. And if you want to share it, you should engage others to understand the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that one, as it says in the what I've underlined, and that is that one should figure out a way, v'tevakesh an Hashem le'ahov oto, find a way that Jews should find a way to be able to engage in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he goes on further, or you look at the Sefri, v'haftas Hashem elokecha. What does it mean to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It means to act like Avraham Avinu, and that is to encourage other Jews to engage in a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or the Gemara in Sanhedrin that reminds us, Shekulam Arevim Zebazet, or a reminder of our responsibilities to engage in the spiritual health of our home and our communities, the Gemara in Shabbos, or the Gemara in Brachas that reminds us that the Pasuk says, Yitamu Chatayim Min Aretz, doesn't say that sinners should be obliterated, but their sins. To remind us that if we can create a filter between the individual and the sin itself, that is really the best way to do things. We don't want to destroy other human beings. We want to remove the challenges they may have in their religious observance. And these are all reminders of our responsibilities to engage society, to engage Jews in observance. And by the way, as a postscript, again, because I view this as not as just a halachic shiur, but as almost a practical rabbinics piece, it's important that we make sure that even our local shuls are user-friendly. You know, most of the shuls that I now have the privilege of frequenting in Teaneck, you won't even find, when you walk in, a box of yarmulkes. Now, I'm not saying that people need them in Teaneck, but that's just the point. There are non-religious Jews in Teaneck, contrary to popular belief. And not everyone who's driving in the streets there are not Jewish. But sometimes in our efforts, in our recognition to develop Torah in a significant way, we forget about a very important symbolisms, and those symbolisms can simply just be welcoming statements that we make, that if somebody walks into our shul, sometimes just to say Kaddish, and they just want to feel comfortable, an explanatory sitter, or kippah, or the capacity, just for them to feel comfortable in certain ways, some type of sign that welcomes everybody, makes all the difference in the world. My point here is that I don't think that this is just being nice. I actually think that this is halachic responsibility of our revus, of engaging other Jews, of finding ways. Well, what I just said are very superficial ways. There actually has to be a more strategic plan. But my point is that I think that this is important for us to engage. But at the same time, we are reminded of the biblical prohibition of lifnei iver lo titein michshol, that one cannot put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. And that stumbling block is not just talking about a physical stumbling block, as we all know, but also a spiritual stumbling block. Can I run an explanatory service if I know that what's going to happen is the person's going to drive to that explanatory service? Can I invite a non-observant relative to my son's bar mitzvah when I know the person might drive? Or can I invite the person to a Shabbos meal or a holiday meal when I know my coworker is going to drive? Or I'll just give you a story that happened to me 2 days ago. We use, for most of the travel at CJF, we use not the regular university travel people. That's always a little bone in the university. But we use a from guy in Borough Park. His name, well, we won't have to mention his name, but he's a nice guy. And the reason, one of the reasons that we do it is very practical, is he's not available on Shabbos, but neither are we, but he's available on Sunday. And sometimes if there are issues that happen, you can call him up. You're traveling for Shabbos, you send a scholar in residence, one of the Rosh Yeshivas somewhere, and there needs to be a change. It's very easy to call him on Sunday, as opposed to a standard university structure that's not really possible. So I'm traveling at the end of January from Florida to Washington. I'm supposed to go Motzei Shabbos, and everything's worked out, but they want to make sure that the time is a little close. So they want to make sure that they want me to print my boarding pass before I get to the airport. It's not really that possible because I have to leave right after Shabbos. So the from travel agent told my secretary that since she doesn't keep Shabbos, she should go online on Shabbos and she should check me in. So she told me this. I told her, absolutely not. You can't do that. It would be forbidden for me to do that. That would be an issue of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshal. I can't ask somebody to do a Maisa Avera for me. Whatever the Maisa Avera is could be a different conversation. But I can't ask the person to do a Maisa Avera for me. And I had a call of a from travel agent up and remind him of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Michshal. You can't ask someone who's not from to do something for you. Not even sure you can ask a non-Jew to do that for you, but for, you know, there at least we can have a conversation. But a non-observant Jew, I don't understand how it could be permitted whatsoever. Now there's no redeeming qualities to it. There's nothing good that's going to happen to it, short of making sure that I can make my plane. In the case of inviting someone to Shabbos to your house, there is redeeming qualities to it. Maybe the person will be inspired. At least minimally, they'll have a Shabbos experience. So what is it permissible for me to do that or not? So we start with the tshuva from Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Moshe Sternbach has a very interesting way of looking at this. Ben bal tshuva mazanu horav usudat leil Shabbos v'yodea sheyachzeru lebeitam b'mechonit. Right? He's asked the following question. Hinei tanata ben hi shebederem zu hu mekarev et horav liyadut. Rashi choshesh b'ma shemachshilim lechalel Shabbat av mi'idach hei b'lal hafki lechalelim Shabbos v'lo ichbat lehem. In other words, the bottom line is they're either going to go to his house Friday night for a meal, or they're going to Macy's for the newest sales, or they're going to a movie. Either way, they're driving. Can they drive to his house for a Shabbos meal? Rak tikvato shalat laat yikarvu u'dvarav kvar roa hitgamuchi yeshetlam kvar gishachar ladat. And the young observant couple has already seen the parents having a new appreciation for religion. The tola davazet bazet shemakarev utam u'mazanim af shenosim b'chazar habayta. It feels that, you know, it's because of this engagement, because of the welcoming in, because of all those other issues. I want to just paraphrase again, because I'm reminding you that this is not just a purely halakhic shir, but a very practical halakhic shir. You always have to be concerned when you invite non-observant parents to the home, you know, how it affects your children, and I want to get into that. I want to minimize that component, because that's also important. We don't want to be involved in kiruv to the point in which we have to be makarev our children, you know, in 20 years from now. But this is his question. And Rav Sternbach answers in a very interesting way, not one that I think is followed by any other posek that I'm aware of. And that is, he says it is not lifnei iver lo titein michshal, because your intention is only to do good. Even though they might do a maisa aveira in the process, that's not what lifnei iver lo titein michshal is. As long as the entire purpose here is for good, and that is to be makariv in the Torah, it is irrelevant to the fact that they're going to drive on Shabbos. In other words, for Rav Moshe Sternbach, the ends of trying to be makariv of them justifies the means, and therefore does not consider it to be any form of Messiah with Deavera, any form of Lufnei Iver. Perhaps there is an issue of Chilul Shabbos Befarhesya, so therefore let them not park right next to your home. But the bottom line is, what counts is your mindset. Your mindset is that they should be spiritually engaged in what Torah is all about. Therefore, Lifnei Iver does not apply whatsoever. Very interesting. And then the truth is, in some ways, you can end... You have a question?
Yeah. So how far away would they be able to live for this to be able to say that you're not hot enough to do the Iver, that if they're just the Iver, you're trying to carry them?
Are you trying to get to the Gemara and Avodah Zarah that required with Lifnei Iver? Is that what that where the question is coming from, or just Stam is coming from?
I mean, within that, you're not hot enough to do the Iver, but they live... They live half an hour away from you, then you are
causing. No, that's his point. His point is, even though you're causing them to do an Aveira, you're not being over Lifnei Iver, because Lifnei Iver is the mindset of the Lifnei Iver is you're trying to put the stumbling block in front of a blind person. Here you're trying to inspire a person. So even though they can live 2 hours away, it doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. They could live, you know, you could live in New Jersey and they could live in Albany. That's not the point. The point is, what counts is that what your mindset is.
Okay?
It's a very hard way. It's a very nice tshuva. It looks very nicely. But it's a little difficult. Because since when does the ends create a way in which you can justify any means that you want to do it? It seems to be a little challenging. Yes?
Presumably, the means when it's lashon is very specifically, very specifically didn't look the either because the nature of. Well, if maybe there is. I doubt he would say this, but there is there.
Of course. You're right. But even that, I think, is a little bit challenging to understand. I mean, I'm not... Again, we could just end it right here and we're good. I'd like to suggest that even if you don't want to assume this position, that the ends are so important that any means possible are permitted. The mitzvah being makari of your parents or anyone else, it that obviates any issue of Ne'iver or Messiah De'aver in any way, shape, or form. I'd like to suggest an additional, what I would consider a more traditional approach to the issue. Everyone good with me so far? Okay. So, let's go a little bit further. Let's go to the next page. So Rav David Zvi Hoffman in Malami L'Hoel asks a very interesting, he has an interesting question. And that is, here's his question. The minyan shalanu, yesh echad or shnayim, shemachalim Shabbos b'farhesya, the machal Shabbos, publicly, lo levad b'lachtam, not just that they work, ki im gam osim mugmar, they smoke, v'afil kiddush v'havdala inam osim, im sharu l'tzar from the minyan. Can you make them part of the minyan? So he goes on, and he says, you know, perhaps machal Shabbos b'farhesya, im tzar from the minyan, that they shouldn't be mitzarif to a minyan, and, you know, but he comes to the conclusion that in Hungary and in Germany, that it's not really a problem. Or if look at the middle set of underlines. Hayotzei mikol hanal. She'af opi din l'chal Shabbos b'farhes she'eim etzarif l'minyan. Ach, b'zman hazeh no'agim l'hakil, ach be'eretz Hungary, Mikosh came to Eretz Ashkenaz. Zechruni, he tells a story. Shapamachas ira velus l'ishachat. There was one time where somebody was in Avel and he came and Shechanu topatua b'Shabbos. His store is open on Shabbos. Buachadi ba'alabachim shukilatenu. He's part of the shul called Kaladash Yisrael. B'yerid l'fnayateva b'beisim nesach shukilatenu. He comes to daven for the Amid. Achagaba yadal ratzot oto ufaiso shalo yirad obene shekahal yiranu alzeh. The Gabbai didn't want him ever to daven again from the Amud because of the fact that the community wasn't happy that a Machal Shabbos should daven in front of the Amud. So he went to a different shul called Chavas Shas. V'af Shagabai, the Sham Haya Ish Charad V'Yiras Elokin, even though the Gabbai there is a religiously observant person, they let him daven. believe me now, without any hesitation, when I asked the Gabbai, why didn't you object? It's been the minhag of this base medrash that we don't stop anyone from davening from the Amud, even if their stores open on Shabbos, because based on perhaps what the Binyan Sion and others write, that a Machalo Shabbos in our day and age is considered a Tinuk Shenishban. This is in Hungary. So surely, and he goes on further, that in America, surely everybody who's not observant is considered a Machalo Shabbos, is considered a Tinuk Shenishba, and there are no halakha challenges whatsoever regarding allowing him to daven from the Amud. My point of bringing this to you is simply to recognize that there is this notion of a machalo of the Tinuk Shenishba, of recognizing that there's a classification of a Jew who may be violating halachot, but since he or she is not totally, has not been totally engaged in a full educational experience, both at home and in the school, that person might be considered, that person has the status of a Tinuk Shenishba, just an important idea to put in the back of your mind. Now, what I'd like to do is the following. I'd like to show you that the whole idea of Ne'iver Lo Titein Mechshal seems to be only an Isser when there is no other way for the person to fulfill the goal that you're asking them, namely to come to your house for Shabbos for a meal, only by doing a Maisa Avera, only by sinning. But if there is another way for them to achieve the same goal, i.e., you make hospitality available to them. You don't just invite them for the Friday night meal. You don't just invite them for the Shabbos meal. But you say to them, why don't you come for Shabbos? Even if they say at the end, that's fine, but we're only going to come Friday night for a meal. Or you invite them Friday night for a meal, but you say to them, listen, you're welcome to stay for the whole Shabbos. Even if they turn you down from coming for the whole Shabbos, that doesn't really make a difference from a Maisa Avera perspective, because you're not violating Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol, as long as you gave them the opportunity, even if they don't take you up on it, as long as you gave them up the opportunity to be able to not to do the Maisa Avera. You wanted to say something?
No, just, we were learning that the Shach says that even if it's Jav Zara, it's still going to be Asher Zerabanan.
Okay, but we'll see in this case that we'll go through it. Okay? Okay. So let's look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says the following. Is everyone with me? Yeah? So Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Menayim shel yoshid adam kosher yayin lenazir. How do we know that it's, you know, how do we know that you now want to give another kosher yayin? Or Abram min achai to b'nei Noach? Because of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol. And then the Gemara puts a specific parameter here. V'ha'acha d'ha'chi lo yavinan le yishak li'ihu v'ka'avra mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Mechshol ha'cha b'may askinan v'kai v'trei avrei nara. In other words, when is this an issue? The issue is when there is essentially the Nazir could not get the wine unless he's on one side of the river, the wine's on the other side of the river, you bring the wine to him. But if the Nazir is sitting right next to a wine store, and he could get any wine that he wants, and you bring him a cup of wine, you are not violating the Fe'iver Lo Titein Mechshol, because the Nazir is able to find the wine on his own. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is essentially putting a protocol here, a parameter here. And the parameter that it's putting down is that you're not violating the Iver Lo Titein Mechshol in a situation in which you're not, in a situation in which the person could get the wine by themselves. This is found in various halachas. One halacha is the following. I'm not allowed to sell to a non-Jew icons of idolatry. Look at the Shulchan Aruch. Devarim shehem yuchadim lemin minei avodas kochavim shebaoto makom. Aser limkol la'ovdei otam avdut kochavim shebaoto makom. I'm not allowed to sell things that are going to cause a person to worship avodah zarah. Why can't I sell it to a guy? No. What am I doing wrong by selling it to a guy? What?
They're going to
They're going to worship it, and if they worship it, what's the iser there? With the either, lo titei mekshol. So, what does the Ramah say? Look at the Ramah. Yesh omrim, ha da'asa limkal lehem dvarim ha-shayachin la-badasam, hainu dafka im ein lehem acherim ki yotze bo. O shalo yochlu liknos b'makom acher. Avo im yecholim liknos b'makom acher, mutar limkor lehem kol davar. What's the Ramah saying here? No, what's the Ramah saying here? Say it. What is he saying? Right, exactly. He's just connecting it back to the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. That if there is a jewelry exchange, and in that jewelry exchange, everyone else is selling icons of idolatry, you, the Jew, can sell it also because you're not over lifting ever. V'yesh machmirim. But the Ramah says, V'nagu l'hakar kisfar rishona, v'chein ba'al ha-nefesh yachmir la'atzmo. It's not the best practice to sell icons of idolatry. Follow nefesh to be yachmer atzmo, but it is mutter because it's not over lifnei iver. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting tshuva on this issue, and he has a few interesting tshuvas. I'll show you that he doesn't exactly agree with the conclusion that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach comes to on this issue. But he asks the following issue. A guy has a catering hall, and this is actually sometimes a problem. A guy has a catering hall, and a person, he owns a catering hall, and the person wants to rent out the catering hall, but the person's going to have mixed dancing at his wedding. Is it permitted for this guy to rent out his catering hall if there's going to be mixed dancing at the wedding? What do you think?
Same issue. If he's the only one in the neighborhood.
So look at Rav Moshe Feinstein. He basically says what you said. Question in London. He's not concerned about another issue of helping a person do a Maisa Avera, because Rav Moshe here is saying that Maisa de Avera is only an Isser when it's walking hand in hand with the Isser of Ne'iver. Kishaleka Isser of Ne'iver, Elo Benosin Lo Dover, Shiasa Bo Rach Maisa Avera. Elo Bedover Sheikar Hu Lo Maisa Heter. But if the actual real Maisa of getting married is a maisa heter. If you go and schira sa ulam shulasos bo chasuna v'sudar, rak she yes hasham davar aga maisa aver the rekudim ein lachashiv she schira zu alzel ulasor. He says you don't have to think that it's usher to do it, and therefore Rav Moshe Feinstein paskins that it's not maseil de avera, it's not lifnei iver whatsoever, because of the fact that there are other halls in which the person could rent. By the way, Rav Moshe actually says something else. Look at the next page. B'inei, ach b'lecha b'mokom acher, nami eno baro le'asor b'kahai gavne, shehu davar she'eno miyuchad, tashmisho rak, lavera, v'yoter nota she'en b'zeh v'shum, lifnei iver, u'mesayeya u'mutar. He says that in this case, it might even be that even if you didn't have another wedding hall, it's not a problem, because the major focus of the catering hall isn't to have mixed dancing, it's to have a chuppah and kedushin, it's to have a sudas mitzvah. So he says for another reason. But my point is, the point I want to just highlight to you is, that it's not lifnei iver, simply because of the reasons we just articulated. that if the person could find another catering hall, it's not a problem. This idea is seen in other places. It's seen in Masechet Shviyas about which kalim can you sell on during the Shemitah year and which kalim can't you sell during the Shemitah year. Anything that can be used totally for a Maisa Aveira, then there is an issue of Ne'iver. Anything that can be used either for a Maisa Aveira and not a Maisa Aveira, there isn't an issue. The Sri De'esh then has a tshuva in which the Sri De'esh was asked the question, someone wants to go to America for a year or so, wants to rent out his store or lease his store, and he's afraid, he's not making it a prerequisite, he's afraid the person is going to keep the store open on Shabbos. Is he permitted to lease the store to that person? The Sri De'esh says also it's not lifnei iver because it's not a prerequisite, it's not a requirement, etc., etc., etc. So, with that in mind, there is a letter here that is now found in the third volume of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Tshuvas, but I wanted to show you the original letter, in which the Yeshiva Or Sameach, which is known for doing kiruv work, asked the following question to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Here's the question. And again, it's now written in the printed tshuva. I could have easily just taken it from my Bar Ilan and given it to you in the printed tshuva. I just thought it's nice to see it in the original surah, so to say. Okay, here's the question. Second paragraph. Somebody want to read this? Anyone want to read this? Instead of me reading it? Yes.
Second paragraph?
Yeah.
Kvodo. Yeah.
Right. Wanted to ask a question regarding the idea of having an explanatory service for those people who are far away from the Jewish experience to be carried into Torah mitzvahs by having, again, this explanatory service. So on,
Uvistameh.
Simon.
Tinokot.
Right, they are like Tinokot Shenishba'u, right? Children who have been held captive, who are not responsible for doing them, since they don't have the proper education. They're in a different category. Uprat. So therefore, I think there are three points you have to be aware of. Point number one. Right. Or makom, yeah. Okay, so what's the first point that it requires? You have to invite him to stay, it's not just closer, that he doesn't have to violate the Shabbos whatsoever. So why is that? Why is he making that a requirement? Guys, why is he making that a requirement?
He has the option of keeping Shabbat.
He has the option of keeping Shabbat. Rav Sternbach would not require this, right? Why wouldn't Rav Sternbach require this?
Your intentions are good.
Right.
Because the means ends justify the means.
In this case, the ends justify the means. Let's not allow Rav Sternbach to be used to justify any type of ends justify means. We can might portray what goes on in the Jewish community if we let that happen. Okay? We don't want to, it's not fair to paint Rav Sternbach into that corner. He clearly doesn't deserve to be there. Okay? It's just on this issue.
Right.
What's this point he's saying?
Even if he refuses,
even if he doesn't accept your invitation, he says, no, I'll just come Friday night. I'll just come Shabbos. I'm not staying over. Okay? You don't have to give him mussar that he can't use his car. Okay? Why is this? Because lifnei iver, even though there are shitas that would perhaps suggest that it would still be a problem. But Shlomo Zalman is saying that in a case in which there's no you have obviated the issue of Lifnei Iver, and by the way, Rav Moshe Feinstein has tshuvas on this that he does not follow the approach of Rav Shlomo Zalman on this. He would still say that there is some concerns here. He does not endorse the notion of formal explanatory services in ways in which you advertise proactively, even if you have to put on the sign, for those who wish Shabbos hospitality, please call 1-800-44-LIFNEI-IVER, right? Right? Rav Moshe, that doesn't work for Rav Moshe, right? But Rav Shlomo Zalman, based on the stuff that we've just studied, and more, but again, time is of the essence here, and I just wanted to create the basics of the picture. That's his first piece. Bet. Migrash. Anyone want to read Bet? Let's get someone else to read. You're elected. Want to read? Yes.
Okay. Migrash panayah shal beit haknesset asher bo mekayim et hatzvila chayav liyot zagur v'meshach kol haShabbos v'yantiv.
The parking lot of the shul has to be closed on Shabbos and Yantiv. Even one that has the explanatory services in there. Why do you think he's saying this? What? I think that's the reason. Could there be another reason you're saying that, do you think? What? Yeah. Right, I think it's just there have to be standards. So actually at the Boca Raton Synagogue, it was an interesting thing. There is somebody in their wisdom, way before I was there, bought, they didn't actually realize this, the whole Boca Raton area is a circle, but it was bought by Texaco because they thought they were going to find gas in the Everglades. And it's very close to the Everglades. I mean, it's 15, 20 minutes by car to the Everglades. So they bought this whole area, and 5 acres in the middle of the center of the circle was designated for a church. So it couldn't be used for building houses anymore. So what happened was they realized there was no gas to be found in the Everglades. So Texaco basically gave this up to people, gave them sections, but they were stuck with this 5-acre parcel in the middle because it was zoned for a church. And who wants to buy something that you can only build a church on and you can't really make any money on it? So a bunch of people who were not, none of them were Shomer Shabbos, bought this parcel of land to create the Boca Raton Synagogue. Now, when we built the shul on this parcel of land, there was a whole bunch of land that is fallow, that's just not being used whatsoever. It's basically forest type of thing. So I actually called Rav Shlomo Zalman and asked, is his Migrash Chania, is that a din in a formal parking lot, or is it a din in the whole area that the shul owns? And what I got back was that no, it was a din in the formal parking lot, because the concern was that it shouldn't be viewed as heter. So if a person's willing to drive their car and park on a field with all the being cracked and holes in it and muddy in the rain and you know, everything else of that nature, that wasn't his concern. His concern was that it shouldn't be that a shul has an open parking lot that everybody thinks that the shop Saturday is no different than Monday. That's the concern. Number three. Let's go to number three, Gimel. Okay, so even though there is a plethora of tshuvas, which we studied some of them, and we ran through them, that would permit someone to be considered part of a minyan who's not Shomer Shabbos, because he has the status of a Tinuk Shenishba, for Shlomo Zalman, who could be viewed as a Mekil in these inyanim, did not permit that person to become part of the minyan. Required there to be 10 Shomer Shabbos Jews, or to the best of our knowledge, Shomer Shabbos Jews, to be considered part of the minyan. He did not permit that. And the final piece?
Misha Sark Shirin Biladan, Bachelor of the Girl, some Gamma Losa Torah, Ularshus the Coin Lab, Ularshus the Coin Lab, was the Dutta and the Berkhas Khan.
Right. Once there's a minion, if you want to give him an Ali, you can give him an Aliyah. Once there's a minion, if you want to let him duchen, he can duchen. And that permitted, yeah.
I'm just thinking of a case if someone was, let's say, sorry, was from and they're not from anymore. They're not from and you're not sure enough in this case.
Why?
Because if it's just about doing good, really thinking that, then he's not a tenor shenish, but he knows a lot.
I'm not so sure he's not still in. There's a, again, this is, it's a wonderful laboratory of experiences. There's a guy who's a graduate of, and I'm not pointing to this yeshiva in particular, because it's every yeshiva in the world has graduates like this, of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, who's the mailman for half of the Shomer Shabbos community of the Boca Raton Synagogue. And he delivered, I just want to give you an example. When my wife was sitting Shiva, we were not living in our home, we were living on the side in which he was the mailman. He knew my wife was sitting Shiva, and we didn't get any mail for 7 days. He passed in, but since my wife was sitting Shiva, he held our mail for 7 days. The day after my wife gets up, he brings in, like people sent us notes, right? 2 crates of mail. He says he was sitting Shiva. I didn't want to deliver mail. I didn't want to be mafriya yeshiva. He brought it in. So there, I think there's a whole bunch of tchum issues and things of that nature regarding him delivering mail and a whole bunch of other stuff. He still, I can tell you who he goes to hear Kiddush for every single Shabbos. And he delivers the mail. And thank God he didn't deliver my mail. He delivered the other. But I have to deal with the halachic issues for this. This guy went to a firm yeshiva. His home was never firm. I still think that person is considered tinuch nishba. Because as important as the schooling institution is, I think also the home also is as equally important, perhaps more of an important incubator, spiritual incubator. And therefore, I still think that that's tinuch nishba. I think that there are halachic ramifications for a Jew delivering your mail on Shabbos, not within the purview of what we're going to discuss here, but I think that I'm not sure the Tinuch Shenishba paradigm gets removed even if the person has a schooling piece.
What if their family is from and they're not?
I still think that if you read the tshuvas regarding America, I still think you get a buy on some level because of the culture of America and things of that nature. We don't live in a society that the norms and mores are consistent with what Torah observance is all about. Now, there are greater poskim there. First of all, there's a posek in this room, right? So you might just, what do you think?
Chazanish writes about this, that there's no klal in this. You have to look at each case by case, and see. Is this person really somebody who was exposed properly and went well or not? Is that a kid?
Yeah.
Just that, according to this, in this discussion, like a mummer, like a classified mummer, like what we assume that he was like brought up in like a great education and had a good family and like still he did it. Like that's what we assume that.
So I would say, you know, first of all, some of the tshuvas refer to that they don't even consider the klal of mummer to exist anymore.
I know, but I'm saying even back in the day, like we assume that they had it, like they had a very like good parents, good home, and great education.
But hungry.
Yeah, or even right. Whenever
we realize that sometimes what we assume to be the perfect years of the past, like we assume everyone went to the legend was Shomer Shabbos, right? You know, there are plenty of people who were in Velazhen, who write pieces about Velazhen, who it was pretty obvious that their Shabbos observance was not consistent with what you would find in the Beis Medrash of YU. In other words, my point being that I think that the nice thing about reading these tshuvas, and by the way, there are new tshuva svarim being printed, that some of these tshuvas are being removed. The mamish editors are making the decisions because these tshuvas reflect a light of clarity of the past that may be inconsistent with their wish for what the past was. They're being removed from newly published tshuva svarim. They're not being changed. The mamish being cut and pasted and cut out, not pasted anywhere. Pasted in the recycling bin, right? It's mamish happening. It's dangerous when what's happening is people are holding I think Torah hostage by doing things of that nature. So I think that the mumra thing, it was probably similar to what Rav Savolovsky said with the Chazon Ish. You have to look at every single case. But I think that it's my point was to highlight that even if you don't hold like Rav Sternbach, that Lifnei Iver is obviated simply by your good intentions, you can create halachic protocols by inviting them to your house for Shabbos, by making sure there's a place for them. And I mean really making sure. You can't live in a studio apartment with your spouse and say, we always have room in our house for you. That doesn't work. You have to actually make sure there's a neighbor that can have a place for them. But assuming you can work that out, I think that as Rosh Shlomo Zalman indicates, and my purpose of teaching you about the issue of Tinuk Shenishba and the fact that many poskim permitted those people to be counted as a minion was to show you that Rosh Shlomo Zalman on this issue is not all the way to the makel extreme. He still was interested in making sure that the, I don't want to suggest, that the integrity of the minyan is such that it's not compromised by people who are not Shomer Shabbos. I'm not sure that's the right language to use. But I'm trying to point out the nuances, how Rav Shlomo Zalman dances on these issues, to create this net of kirov, but at the same time of trying to make sure that there's a certain level that there needs to be, that the Shomer Shabbos carries the moment regarding observance. Yes?
What do you think Rav Shlomo Zalman would say about a situation where if you would actually close down the Beit Knesset, a congregation of, say, 600 people would dwindle down to a congregation of 70 people, and of the
people... Oh, you mean because of the open parking lot?
Yeah,
that's a different case. And by the way, there are other poskim. There are great rabbanim of great communities that have open parking lots.
Yeah.
The Rosh Hashiva of Neir Yisrael always permitted his musmachim to have an open parking lot. And I don't speak ill in any way, shape, or form of the Rosh Hashiva of Neir Yisrael and their permission to do it. I'm just saying that this is what Rav Shlomo Zalman asked him. Our conversation is not about open parking lots and Shabbos. Our conversation is, how do we invite the non-observant to our homes on Shabbos and Yom Tov? And my point was to show you there are two gateways to deal with this issue. Rav Sternbach, who says it's not Lifnei Iver, because that's not what your mindset is. Finished. And I would say a more traditional approach to handling that is, you obviate the issue of Lifnei Iver by making sure that you deal with the idea that you're not giving the nazir the wine from the other side of the river. You're creating the opportunity for the nazir to be able, or the non-shomer Shabbos to be able to celebrate Shabbos fully. But if he chooses not to, as long as you offer him the opportunity, the Lifnei Iver falls away. Yes.
One interesting point about a possible smach for Moshe Sternbach in the pasuk Yeres and Lekecha, but in the pasuk Rashi there says that it's that the Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what your kavanos are.
Right.
So kind of what you just.
Well, I'm not saying if I didn't think Rav Sternbach had great, I wouldn't put him as a first source. But you're right. So I just want to just end with one comment, and then just a personal piece, and that is that I think it is important that we make sure that our homes are open. You don't have to be a rabbi in an out-of-town community, which, by the way, I would encourage everybody to do. But you don't have to be a rabbi in an out-of-town community in order to be able to do this. You could live in New Jersey, you could live in Riverdale, you could live in the five towns, right? There are many of us who have family who are not Shomer Shabbos. There are many of us who have friends and not Shomer Shabbos. There are many of us who have friends who went to Yeshiva who are not Shomer Shabbos. Our parents have colleagues that are not Shomer Shabbos. It's an opportunity for us. Shabbos is a wonderful, non-coercive. It's not like sitting in shul the whole Yom Kippur. It's a wonderful, non-coercive experience. And sometimes for the price of a chicken, you can change the soul of a Jewish person. And I think that's not something that should be ignored. But I think there's a even greater piece. The experiences that I think my family and other rabbinic couples have is is a wonderful experience for your children to see people struggling with Shabbos observance. It forces them, if you educate, and you have to talk to them about it, to let them know that you've made certain proactive decisions with your life regarding how you're observing your life, decisions that you've made with your life. And when you see people going through this process of exploring Shabbos, not every single person makes the decision to keep Shabbos. Some by inviting them for Shabbos will decide to do something like not marry a guy, but will always drive on Shabbos. Some will decide to keep Shabbos. I mean, I know of at least 100 couples, 100 families who decided to become Shomer Shabbos by people opening their homes in the Boca community. At least 100 families. And it's a spiritual having a Baal Tshuva in your shul who's struggling to find a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu and can't read the Siddur, but is more committed to the tefillah experience than sometimes the person who could read the Siddur by heart, and it has a robotic, you know, FFBBR, firm from birth but robotic, you know, experience. It really inspires you also. My point is, it's a two-way street, and I would encourage people to recognize the fact that there is this wonderful opportunity for us to invite our brothers and sisters into our lives, into our hearts, into our homes, and to do it as I know Rabbi Sabalevsky has articulated throughout this trip about making sure that we make sure that the halacha is first and foremost. Ours is not just an emotional, intuitive response. It must be conditioned through a halachic process. But here are two different paradigms which truly give us the spiritual compass of how we're supposed to engage our brothers and sisters and how we can fulfill the mitzvah of our revus by inviting them to our homes and our shuls for Shabbos. Yes?
We heard when we were in America from like one of the trainings, we had Rabbi Buchwald speak to us, and he spoke about like the notion that it's important to do Kiruv, but numbers-wise, what would be more effective is to keep the frum, for like put more effort in like the frum people and try to have them stay frum rather than outreach and that sort of thing. So of course, if you have time to do both, you should do both. But like in terms of that balance, what do you think?
So again, I think that I actually think that there is a way to achieve both of them in almost. I think what Rabbi Buchwald was trying to articulate, he was probably didn't say it in these words, is there are more people doing Kirov than are being Makarev. He might not have said it as starkly as that. If you add up all the outreach professionals and you add up all the people who are becoming religious, there are more people in outreach than there are people becoming religious, which doesn't, you know, when you have measures and metrics in your work performance, is not a good one. All right? And that's an important thing to recognize. But I actually think that there is a way. Even look at NCSY Kollel. When NCSY, at least when I was on NCSY Kollel, there were times in which we had like games against the public school kids and stuff like that. Does that still happen anymore? I don't know if that happens. It doesn't happen anymore. And there are still the opportunities. There were opportunities in which we would engage. And I found that to be a wonderful experience for both sides of the aisle, so to say, because I think they learned from each other. And I think that if there was a group of students who were, you know, looking to strengthen their spirituality and were Shomer Shabbos, if done properly, having a buddy who is struggling to grow in observance will inspire both of them. It will be a chavrusa. I don't think it will pull the other person down. I think it will inspire that person. So I think that when partners in Torah, which is developed by Torah Mesorah, they'll tell you that the persons being inspired are not just the people who are, you know, wanting to learn who can't read anything, but the person who is there to do the teaching is also being taught. So I think if there are ways in which students can create informal gatherings, then I forgot his first name, Fine, from the yeshiva.
Yoni
Fine. So he went to the University of Indiana for Torah tours. So he and his whole group, I don't know if any of you are in this group, are like on fire now to go to all these different university places. right? So I think that Yoni Fine and that group are going to gain as much as they're about to go to University of Delaware as they will give. Because I think that it forces them to recognize that Shabbos and Torah observance is not something we take for granted. So I wouldn't take the observant student who's in a state of total questioning and connect him with a public school kid. But the kid who needs to grow and inspire, to connect with a kid from public school who's struggling with getting closer to Judaism, it could be an experience that both get, that both are achieved. And truly, I think that we need to recognize the fact that our first and foremost responsibility is to make sure the core is strong, the Torah core is strong. Because when the Torah core is strong, it can radiate outward. But we can't forget in the process that if we don't radiate outward, I do believe that when we live a Robinson Crusoe lifestyle, I think it affects our own religious experience. And that's why I think people who teach Torah actually probably gain more out of that teaching than they do when they learned in the Beis Medrash without being forced to teach, because there is a certain extra level that happens when you are forced to engage. Okay? Okay, thank you very much.
Guys, thank you, Rev. Rainer, for the insightful share. What we're going to do now is we're going to have lunch upstairs in the